the paranormal field. Radio Network. The Paranormal View.
And welcome everybody right here to The Paranormal View on the para-x.com radio. Want to thank everybody for being here tonight. Got a large crowd in the chat room. And thank those for listening from around the world. We appreciate each and every one of you. If you are not here in the chat room and you might want to have questions, feel free to come over to para-x.com, click on the live chat button, and you'll be in with all these wonderful people. You'll be able to ask us questions, and we'll get answers from our guest, which we have a good guest tonight, and it ought to be a fun show. And I see a frowny face. Are we on?
Yeah.
What?
Nobody said anything.
Oh, no, I think that's just somebody saying they weren't here last week.
Okay.
They're all feeling sympathy for, obviously, they
I just want to make sure. All right. Tonight we have with us Barbara Duncan.
I am here.
We have Jeffrey Gould.
Hello, hello.
And one who was lost last week, we have her back, Cat Cloco.
Bigfoot didn't get me, guys.
I'm alive and
well. Yeah. Sorry about that.
She was out wandering around.
Lost. In the land without Wi-Fi or phone signal.
I could understand that if you'd been in Buffalo, but...
You're Buffalo, New York? No, they still have Wi-Fi. But, no, I was out in the Daniel Boone State Forest in southern Kentucky. And... Oh. Yeah, touring the Natural Bridge. And
is there an easier way to get coonskin caps?
I didn't get a coonskin cap.
Was she trying to make her own?
No.
Oh.
But, yeah, I was in the cabin out in the woods. Yeah.
So, and considering you hate horror films, there you are in a cabin with no cell signal.
I know. You know what? The irony did not fail me. That's exactly what I said to Mike when we checked in and unpacked. I'm like, we're in the cabin without any phone signal in the middle of the woods. We're going to die here tonight, aren't we?
But you didn't.
So. We didn't. I'm still, unless this is the best EVP ever recorded.
With that, Jeff, why don't you introduce our guest, because I'm sure we're going to have a lot to say.
Absolutely. Well, tonight our guest is Kimmy J. Belanger. KJ is officially a new author with her first book, A Witch Walks Among Broken Branches, with the Dark Moon Press family. Covering the discovery of her family lineage in the paranormal, KJ hopes to put it in print, will help others help find their own personal path, despite what others may want, the stupid, narrow-minded bunch. Anyway, KJ's journey has taken many twists and turns and has taken her places to which no one would have guessed, which is how she found herself here at the Paranormal View. So welcome, Kimmy J. Belanger.
I really didn't think I'd end up here. You're right.
What, was you getting lost also?
I am so lost, Henry. You have no idea.
Well, now, you just recently moved, and I keep seeing negative prints on Facebook about Wilmington.
Yeah, I just left Virginia after 14 years, and, you know, everybody was saying what a wonderful place it is and how beautiful it is, and you're going to love it when you get down there. And, you know, the minute I actually landed here and started to unload my stuff, I just had this feeling that I'm not in the right place. And the beaches are phenomenal. The riverfront is phenomenal. And I got to say, the people that I have met have been very, very pleasant. But there's just something here that it's just rubbing me the wrong way.
Well, it is an old town. It is a college town. And when I first moved down here back in 1970, the Highway 132, it runs in front of the college, was a little two-lane road. And after you crossed over the overpass going over Market Street, uh-huh, it was nothing but woods all the way out through there.
It's not now.
Oh, I know it's not now.
I'm actually very close to Market Street. I'm actually only 4 miles off Wrightsville Beach.
Oh, well, okay. They're going over toward Wrightsville Beach that way. They didn't used to be anything out through there either. That used to be all woods.
It's beautiful. I'll give you that. It's beautiful. You know what ruined me, Henry?
What?
When I went to the DMV.
Oh.
Oh my God. We literally had to play, and this is no joke, people. If in Wilmington, if you need to go to the DMV, you will be playing musical chairs. Meaning, when they call you up, they will literally say, "Everybody get up and move over one chair, please." And you do.
Really?
Oh my God.
Wow.
I should have the order of your number?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
Yeah. And then they didn't want to give me my license because apparently they didn't believe my middle name.
Huh.
And they wanted me to go home and get my birth certificate. Now, mind you, I just packed up my life and it was still in cartons. They wanted me to go back and get my birth certificate to prove. And thank God the lady behind the counter just said, "Just give it to her." Or I'd probably still be there today because I don't know where it is.
Wow.
So, yeah.
See, I feel like bringing stuff like either birth certificate or passport or something was standard procedure to the DMV.
Well, in Virginia, you just kind of do what you want, and they just, you know, stamp everything, and then you just...
That is so different from Ohio, because you have to prove that you are not only an American citizen, but like a citizen of Earth. And that you did not come from an asteroid far, far away.
It was just—it's just a nightmare. And so now, I am in the process of moving out of here. I don't know how long it's going to take me, but I will either end up in Charlotte, North Carolina, or I may be back up in Michigan.
Back up in Michigan.
Yeah.
Well, what is your? Can your husband move like that, or did he go down there with a job, or what happened?
He'll do whatever I got to do.
Oh, he'll do whatever you got to do, huh?
Yeah. He will follow or he won't.
Oh. So,
but I got family. That's where my family is, and it's calling to me. So I might, after this, I'm going home probably.
Back to Michigan.
Yep.
Where in Michigan?
Grand Rapids.
Woo! I grew up in Mishawaka, Indiana. So neighbors, Grand Rapids, neighbors. Yeah, neighbors. Woo!
Wow.
So
we got on here to talk about your book, and I guess that's what we should do.
Yeah, enough of my misery. Let's just go. Let's just move forward.
I guess you've had a lot of, I don't want to say problems growing.
Yeah, I have. You go ahead, say it.
but you had a. You had a life.
I mean,
oh. Jeff's still trying to get his license. I don't know.
Are you at the DMV here in Wilmington?
I have to say, you know, the DMV, when I moved to California, everybody kept telling me, oh, you know, it's going to be rough, it's going to be nasty. I walked in there and was out with my license in 20 minutes.
God bless you, girl.
Really?
Yeah, it was a miracle.
And I'm down in Hollywood, Los Angeles, and all I did was I had my my passport, and I actually did have my birth certificate with me, and I went in. I was only getting an ID because I don't have a car and I take public transit, so I just. You know, here you go, and like she said, about 30, 40 minutes, I was done.
Yeah. But Kimmy.
Yes.
Your background, and you talk about it briefly in the book, that it sounds like there was a lot of connection between you and your mother.
Very much so. Yeah, very much so. She, I literally contribute to me making it through everything I went through to her, because she taught me more or less how to just, you know, like when to be silent and when to speak up, because as you guys know, I'm very outspoken. And yeah, she just kind of took, she taught me the calm I needed to get through a lot of things.
Do you think that calmness got you through a lot of the rough, rocky stuff?
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. One of the big things I try to do, which is very hard for me, is to just to know when to step back and just listen and take it in and not jump. And to this day, it still takes me a lot to do that. And that's one lesson I keep learning over and over and over.
Now, you said your mother was Native American. What tribe was she with?
She was with the Cherokee.
Cherokee.
On her father's side, her father was full-blooded, and her mother was Irish. So she was the half-breed there, which makes me a quarter now.
And your dad?
My dad was kind of a mixture of everything, but mostly French-Canadian.
Ah, okay.
So that's the last name that I kind of would like. I like the French pronunciation because, you know, the rest just doesn't cut it.
Yeah, Bélanger.
Bélanger.
Well, now, did she teach you a lot of the ways of the Native American life?
In her own way, she did. You got to understand, you know, I'm old, and back in the day, you didn't talk about it a lot that way. Native Americans weren't looked upon as favorable as they are now. So it was just more or less something that it was mostly when her and I were alone, she would, you know, tell me about a lot of the cool little things they did, the crafts and everything. She was very holistic in the way she did things too, which was kind of very odd. Like I spoke in the book, how most kids would go to the doctor. You get sick, you go to the doctor and you get a shot or you get your medicine, your cough syrup. She would make our cough syrup, and it was the nastiest stuff in the world, but it worked. And it was just made of, as I recall, she did different varieties of it, but most of it was just like she'd boil water and boil onions and garlic and put that in a mason jar and then put honey in the mason jar, and then there was lemon in it, and, you know, and then she would sit there and let it just kind of cool down, and then we'd have that mason jar in the refrigerator, mm-hmm. and it would kind of start to coagulate a little bit and get a little thick. And man, that stuff was rank, but it would clear your sinuses and make your throat feel better. And, you know, that's just the way it was. You didn't run out to the store and get Robitussin or anything back then.
We did that too, and because my mom and him was from the eastern hills of Kentucky, and they would take honey, whiskey, whorehound candy crushed up, and
oh, that's good candy. I forgot all about that.
And they would mix it just like that, let it steep, put it in the fridge, and if you got a cough or something, man, here comes the spoon. You better be ready to take it. This stuff didn't taste good.
Oh, God, no, it was awful. It was just awful.
Yeah.
But it worked, so what are you going to do? You know, and we did a lot of holistic things that way. I remember if you get stung by a bee, she would say, well, go get some mud out of the backyard and, you know, mix it up, and you'd throw a mud pack on until it dried, and that would, you know, draw the venom, I guess it's called.
Yeah.
The sting, yeah, and if you had the stinger in there, it would actually draw the stinger out as well. We did all kinds of crazy stuff. You know, if you had a wart, you'd cut a potato and put a potato on it. And I mean, it sounds so odd, but the stuff really worked.
Well, they couldn't run to the drugstore way back when, and they had to learn all those remedies like that, and it worked.
Yeah, it did work, and you know, and there was just a. I don't know. I didn't think of it as odd, and I really didn't take into account that a lot of my friends that just, they didn't do that. They actually went to the store, went to the doctor. The only downfall was when I really got sick, like really sick, it took a lot for me to get to the doctor because you just didn't go.
Now, I want to remind everybody, if you do have questions, you can private chat them to either Ceiling Cat, Cat PV, Jeffrey, or myself, and we will get those questions right over to Kimmy. So feel free to do that. If you're listening from somewhere other than in the chat room and you have questions, you can send us email with a question saying to the paranormal view at gmail.com. And we also have another way too, right, Kat?
Yes, we do. We have Twitter. You can follow us at Paraview Radio.
All right. So many ways to get a hold of us.
Mm-hmm.
Do so.
Yeah, and if you have a question about my family, apparently my cousin Dan is in the chat room. So just ask Dan.
Just ask Dan.
I love that man. He's hysterical.
Is that DB?
That's DB.
DB.
Oh, I just made a joke in his defense. I'm almost sorry.
That's Daniel Boulanger. Yes.
Well, I am glad that he is here. You know, did any of your other siblings, did your mom teach them the ways also of the natives? Or?
Yes and no. I was the youngest. So when and I'm quite a bit younger than my eldest brother. He's 15 years my senior. So a lot of things were left to me, I guess, because we had a lot of chaos in our family, you know. And if you read my book, and I know Henry, you have, and, you know, you guys have, there's a lot of chaos going on. So actually, I kind of got the benefit of my mother being the youngest. I guess I was probably the most protected, I guess, at that point. And so it was mostly her and I left at home. You know, my other brother was going off to college and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I kind of benefited probably more than the others did.
Well, at what
point? And I am told your nephew Brent is in chat.
Oh, hi, Brent. That's excellent.
Mm.
Yeah, he had another, you know, we can talk about this a little later if you'd like, but he's actually one that has inherited the gift also.
Ah, okay.
Ah, which we will be talking about down through your family. A lot has that. We're going to be talking about that a little bit later. When did you realize that you were a witch or leaning that way?
Well, it was really kind of a slow progression. I knew something was different and odd with me as a child, and as I got older, I kind of got really interested in religions and trying to figure out what was going on and what the differences were, and so I really fought the Christianity thing. It didn't feel right to me. But when everybody around you is doing that, is Christian, and you're going like, wow, my odd man out, maybe I should look into this a little bit. So as I started to do that, it was kind of like moving to Wilmington, Henry. It just didn't feel right.
Didn't feel right.
Something wasn't right. So as I got going a little bit, and, you know, I kind of started studying Wicca a little bit. And looking into that, it started to resonate a little within me. You know, it's like, yeah, I kind of dig some of this stuff. But then I read some things and, that ain't right, you know, or it just didn't feel right. And so I kind of went back to Christianity a little bit. And, well, let's look at this a little bit, you know. And then I thought, well, I got to broaden my horizons here a little bit. So then I started looking at, you know, Buddha. And, I even looked at like, Aborigine stuff and all this weird stuff. I just wanted to know a little bit of everything to see what set right. Well, eventually, as I got older, now I'm getting into my, you know, later years, I'm getting into my 20s and everything, and it's like, you know, I want to kind of figure something out here. And the more I studied things, and then I got talking to people like you guys, you know, with all these shows that were coming out about the paranormal, and, you know, talking to metaphysical people and spiritualists and everything, they started actually telling me, you know, what's with you? You know, why are you doing all these researching and, you know, the Wicca and stuff? He goes, it's not learned. You just are. And I didn't understand what that was. I said, well, what do you mean? And a couple of people started saying, you know how a psychic, isn't taught. It's something they have. And I'm like, yeah, I guess I can understand that. They said, well, you're not a Wiccan. You're just a witch. You're just, it's natural. It's within you. It's what happens. And it's organic. And it's not learned. It's just what you are. So then when I kind of accepted that a little bit and kind of, you know, I mean, what do you do with that information? You're like, seriously, you know, what does that mean? And there was a lot of confusion and a lot of almost disbelief. But, you know, it felt probably the most right than any other explanation there was. And so with that information, I kind of started looking into family things a little bit. And then I started noticing I wasn't the only one. A lot of my family was a little different.
Different?
Yeah. And which, when you look at it in a perspective of, you know, I can't swear on this show either. I got to watch my mouth. When you look at it in the aspect that some of these people weren't just being, insert expletive, it was they actually had a darkness about them. And then I started learning more about that, and I'm like, aha, I get it. And then things started to come about on how I was understanding things. They were natural at what they did too.
But a lot of your family members didn't want to use that. They wanted to hide it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it was? Yeah, they didn't want to let anybody know they had anything like that.
A lot of them, and you know what? And even today, a lot of them, since I've wrote this book, it's like all of a sudden more are coming out of the woodwork. And it was very, very interesting that it took me to finally say, you know, damn it, this is what I am. And like me or not. And, you know, a lot of family was like, I started getting like Bible quotes mailed to me. Like they were trying to save me. And I'm going like, wait, we all grew up in the same family. And you're trying to save me? Because we had a whole bunch of crazy going on and you were part of that crazy. You know, so all of a sudden these people just started finding God, which I guess is good, and if that's what works for you, that's fine.
Well, it also depends on which God. So
thank you. You know, because your God's certainly not my God. And then I had a lot of, oh my God, seriously?
Have you seen the bumper sticker saying my gods can beat up your God?
No. Yeah. Can I get one?
Can I?
That would be excellent.
I have not seen that one yet.
I have.
Oh my goodness. Oh, now I see my nephew Brent in chat. Okay, now I get the word or the name. Okay. I forgot he went by that name.
Oh.
So. Okay.
I wonder how many other family members are in here that are going like, oh my God, she's talking.
I don't know, but it feels like a family reunion.
I know, right? Which I just got back from one not too long ago. And that's where I found out that my nephew Brent has had an experience, which was very interesting.
Really?
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about that a little bit later, too, if you like.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I guess you say in your 20s when you finally started thinking about that, I guess you might say?
On a serious level. I kind of knew when I was like 13 was my earliest aha moments where I knew that I was different in my thinking and that I could, I don't know, I don't want to say manipulate. Okay. That I could manipulate people. And
how about influence?
I'm sorry?
Wouldn't influence be perhaps less?
Thank
of a...
you. Let's use that word because that's a lot less.
A lot more positive.
Yeah,
less kind of positive evil villain.
Chaos magic-y. Let's put it that way. Yeah, I could read people very well. I started noticing when I was 13, and I could use that to my advantage. And I started to realize that family members were really good at that too. They could read their weaknesses and use that to their advantage. And whether you want to call that paranormal or not, I think that's a really intense intuitiveness.
Right.
That I started to understand that I wasn't the only one with this in the family. That my brothers were really good at that.
Did they realize what it was they had, or they just didn't realize it?
I think they knew exactly what they had. I think that I don't know if it was put in the terms of paranormal or put in the words of a gift or magic, but they knew exactly what they were doing and how they were doing it.
Well, now, did you know if you got that from your mom? Did you notice if she was able to do anything like that?
Now, here's the thing. This whole time when I was a teenager, I thought, this stuff comes from my mom, because she's, for one, I guess, Native American. For two, she was a very quiet woman. And she was spiritual in her own way. And she was a thinker. And she was very good at cocooning herself and protecting herself in her own way. And so I thought, you know, I'm getting this from her, which I think I got some of it from her. But then the more I got into it and got into the family tree a little bit more, I noticed that my father's side of the family actually had more. And it was deeper and it was darker, and it was, I don't want to say more powerful, but it was powerful in a different way. And the whole family dynamic started to change. And I think a lot of my darkness and my survival skills and a lot of my influential ways, thanks, Jeff, came from that side of the family, not so much my mom's. I think my survival tactics came from my father's side, but my survival cocooning and healing myself came from my mother's side.
Well, as we were saying before, you had a lot of turmoil, I guess, with your other siblings. And was your father also like that? Because in the book, I got the impression that you guys didn't necessarily always get along real good.
My father was a very, very, very stern man. Especially if you were a woman in the family. And I know a lot of my family's going, taking that deep breath, relax, guys, it's going to be okay. If you were a woman in the family, you had a place and you had a job, and it really wasn't recommended that you deviate from that plan. Girls were to grow up, they were to meet a man, more or less, you know, be subservient to that man, have children, and that's the way of it. So if you didn't do that, then you were kind of a troublemaker, which I think I was a little bit of a troublemaker, because when my father would say things, not that I disrespected, you know, in that household, you kind of did what you had to do to survive. So you, at times you had to kind of back down and just kind of know your place. But as I got older, I was much more vocal and much more, you know, no, that's not the way it is. And yeah, we got along towards the end. Before he passed away, I gave him a book by Dr. Buscalia. It was called The Way of the Bull. And in the book, I kind of, you know, talk about that, on how I perceived him as that bull, and it was his way or the highway. Well, within that book, it was also a story about how that bull learns to accept things and accept people, and kind of learn that they're not always right. And I think that's when things started to kind of turn for us. And that was about 6 months before he passed away.
Mm.
So that was actually a very good thing, because at the end, we finally had closure.
Well, that's good. It's always good.
Yep.
So after you went through high school and got out, you moved away from home?
I actually moved out when I was 17. It was immediately after I graduated. Found a group of friends. They had an apartment. I had a great setup. I lived with five guys. I was dating one of them, and the deal was, while they went to college, when they went to school, if I did their laundry and had dinner on the table when they got out of class, I was rent free.
I guess that's kind of a good way to do it.
So that was fantastic. And so I did that during the day, and then I had my job at night, and yeah, and all the money was mine.
Well, can't beat that then.
No, but that turned around on me, because as my daughter got older, she got a male roommate, and I kind of went like, what? And I couldn't say anything. So, you know, what do you do?
Always comes back on you like that.
It does. Man. I know.
Well, we got lots.
It's called parental karma.
Thank you.
Yeah.
God. Somebody should have told me.
Yeah.
Were you still, at the time that you was doing this, were you still growing and learning more things and leaning still toward being a witch, or finding out that you was a witch?
I'm still learning and growing, and my opinions still change.
Well, I do that all the time. But
yeah, I don't think you ever stop, and if you do, I think you're done. You might as well die.
Yeah. So.
But yeah, my 20s were very odd, because I was still trying to figure it all out. I was getting closer, and I definitely knew what I didn't like. But the word saying, yeah, I'm a witch, probably didn't come, oh gosh. I would say my daughter was probably entering about 10 years old. And I was starting to, you know, that's the age where they start kind of asking questions too, like, you know, who is God, you know, and do you believe in God, and right, all that kind of stuff. So I knew that was my turning point. Of, wow, I got to get it together here. I got to figure it out. Either if my opinion's right or wrong, you know, and her father is Catholic, you know, and I couldn't say, you know, don't teach her that, because I wanted her to be well-rounded. So right. I wanted to realize my beliefs and have a sturdy enough base to where when she asked me things, I could tell her, because her father already had that base. So I had to start figuring it out right around, yeah, when she started asking questions. That was when I really had to get it together.
All right. I think what we're going to do is take us a break, because we got tons more stuff to talk about. And we'll take us about a 7-8 minute break, something like that. Stretch your legs and go get something to drink or whatever. Just remember, the mics are live. So... You're on Skype. You can mute that way if you want. With that, Kat, you wasn't here last week, so
no, I wasn't.
You get a.
We're gonna make Kat do all of it.
Yeah,
all of it.
All of it.
This is revenge for Bigfoot abducting me, I guess.
Yeah, I'll let Kat take us out, and Cece can bring us back then.
Anyway, everyone, you are listening to The Paranormal View with your hosts, Henry Foister, Barbara Duncan, Jeffrey Gould, and myself, Kat Cloco. Tonight, our guest is Kenny Bélanger, an author of A Witch Walks Among Broken Branches. More to come after the break.
It's always time for the dead to shine in Hollywood. The legendary Dearly Departed Tours has stepped up their ghostly game by offering the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour. Dearly Departed has long been an orb of hope in the paranormal world, having been featured on television's Haunted History and Haunted Collector. Their terrible tales have been made infamous in Marla Brooks' The Ghosts of Hollywood books. The new Ghosts and Legends Tour is a 10-block, 70-minute dusk-time stroll down the boulevard of broken dreams. You'll be guided through the golden age of Hollywood and see where the unearthly Bela Lugosi, Lon Chaney, and the calamitous Black Dahlia are still said to linger. You'll see Hollywood's gothic hotels, legendary theaters, and restaurants, never forgetting their permanent occupants. No stranger to investigations, Dearly Departed Tours has first-hand knowledge of some of these hauntings. For details of the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour, find Dearly Departed Tours on Facebook, dearlydepartedtours.com, or call 1-855-600-DEAD.
Ghost Hunters Case Log 451. The time? Thursday, 8 p.m. Okay, we're going to start an EVP session. Is there anyone out there? Can you repeat that? I really need you to try to project louder and slower so we can all hear.
The Black Cat Lounge.
That's right, gang. Listen in, the Black Cat Lounge, every Thursday night, 8 o'clock, on Para X.
Hi, this is Hollywood Hunt writer Marla Brooks, and you're listening to the Para X Radio Network.
Millions of people are affected by the Para X bugs.
I realize that it is something that will stay with me for the rest of my life and long into the afterlife as well.
If you have the Para X bug, there is hope.
With a nightly visit to the Para X website and intensive past life regression therapy, I can control it.
Even with the Para X bug, I can still lead an active life of radio show hosting, paranormal investigating, evidence checking, attending conferences, book writing, keeping up with the latest technology, and still keep my 40-hour-a-week day job.
If you think that you have the Para X bug or know someone who might, visit para-x.com. And remember, you are not alone.
I am not alone.
I
am not alone.
The Para X bug may cause the urge to chase shadow people, visit exotic haunted locations, adopt a pug wedgie, or spend all of your time trying to figure out the laws and principles of paranormal investigation. Listening to Para X may increase these effects.
Sudden visions of full-body apparitions or feeling the covers being pulled off you in the middle of the night by unseen hands may also be signs of exposure to the Para X bug.
The use of Para X may be habit-forming, and an overwhelming desire to provoke spirits may be a serious side effect. If these symptoms last more than 4 hours, you should quickly consult a trusted witch and have her cast a "What the hell are you thinking?" spell on you. If symptoms persist, please contact the Para X Radio Network Homeland Security Team for further instructions.
The Para X bug may cause urges for late-night speaking with spirits and ghosts. Listening to Para X may increase these effects. Overwhelming desire to try provoking a spirit may be a serious side effect. Those with Para X bug effects lasting more than 4 hours should consult Para X or see a professional. Sudden outbursts at the mention of orbs may be a sign of exposure to the Para X bug. Use of Para X may be habit-forming. Use caution when engaging in Para X chat.
Your source for everything paranormal, Para X.
Hi, I am John Zaffis, and you are listening to Paranormal View on the Para X Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Eric Beebe, owner of Postmortem Press, independent press outside the lines. And I'd like to invite you, the paranormal community, to check out our website, www.postmortem-press.com. We are currently looking for nonfiction paranormal books. Tell me about your hauntings. Tell me about haunted locations, experiences that you've had in unusual places, anything in the paranormal. This is an area that we would really like to explore, and maybe what you have to say is something we'd like to share with the world. So you can check us out again at postmortempress.com.
You know, there's nothing like a great memory of a great time. And if you grew up during the 1950s, 60s, 70s, or 80s, boy, have we got the memories for you. There was no time more innocent than the 1950s or 60s, nor was there a time more politically explosive. Hi, this is Steve Shockley, a.k.a. The Shock. Join me live every Friday and Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern for a Baby Boomer Rock with a Shock sock hop on Rock with a Shock. Radio.com.
You don't have to be a plumber to investigate the paranormal. Everyone is welcome to the Para X Radio Network. Tune in 7 days a week for great shows and special live events. 24 hours a day, Para X is the place for paranormal talk. So whether you're a plumber or just another axe-throwing dragon, Para X is your source for everything paranormal.
Welcome back, everybody. everybody to the Paranormal View here on Para X Radio. Tonight, we got listeners. We got listeners from a lot of places. We got listeners from Canada, the United States, the United Kingdom, Haiti, Costa Rica, Romania, and the unknown.
Wow.
Unknown returned!
Unknown is back.
So where's that, what country's Romania in?
Oh, you did not seriously ask that question.
That's okay. I was watching The Amazing Race last night to make your way to Malta, and most of the teams were like, where's Malta? Is that in a country? I'm like, oh, come on. Please only be one team. No, it was like most of them. They were like, they were in Canadian country.
Face palm time.
We don't know.
And I put my palm on my face because I'm sad.
And everybody, please welcome back our very special guest tonight, Kimmy J. Boulanger, a.k.a. Cupcake.
Cupcake. How long have you been calling me a cupcake?
Since your show.
I was wondering about that name.
Yeah.
Do you just really like cupcakes?
Kimmy always had a cupcake next door name.
Yes. And actually, I think that started with Nancy. everybody knows Nancy Shaw. I think I think she said she was throwing cupcakes at somebody at one point. I don't know, and she hit me, and it stuck.
Oh, was that when I was having cupcake fights back then?
Yeah. Good times.
So she's always been Kimmy Cupcake.
So we can blame it on Nan.
Yeah. Yes, it's Nancy's fault.
So next time I write a book, I'm going to put it out by Cupcake Boulanger.
And they have to be pink cupcakes.
Absolutely.
Well, now, getting back to you, we're going to talk about some other people in your book here in just a second, but at an early age, what were some of the things that may have been happening to you that you picked up on?
You know what? People are going to think I'm crazy, but I have validation in my craziness. I remember when I was in, I was in probably fifth, sixth grade. It was just about when I was about getting ready to go into the junior high type thing. You know how you walk down the sidewalk and you're just walking along, and I felt like I was being just slightly lifted up off the ground. Mm-hmm. and gliding. And it's so vivid. I can feel it today. Even if it's just like I'd be walking down the street and I'd feel like somebody kind of lifted me up, and I was gliding. And I even remember saying to myself, is this really happening? Or looking down at my feet and checking. And I wasn't floating, but it was just the sensation of me gliding. And I thought, that's really, that scared me, because I didn't know if something was like wrong in my brain. But later on, my daughter actually did that. And in my talking to my other family members, one of my nieces actually did that, and neither one said anything about it for the longest time. My daughter actually, came to me and told me, she goes, I'm going to tell you something here, and remember when you told me how that used to happen to you? Well, it's happening to me. And I was like, okay, that's really crazy. And then later on, I was talking to one of my nieces, and my niece says, I used to do that. And I don't even understand quite what that was even about. I don't. Have any of you guys ever done that?
No.
Only in dreams. No. The thing is a lot of people fly in their dreams. I tend to sort of coast along a few inches off the ground when I like a floating. And I don't really fly per se in dreams. There are times I'll float along and I'll be thinking, wow, it looks like I can really do this, because my brain is tricking me into not recognizing I'm dreaming.
Well, yeah, I fly in my dreams, too, but when I meditate, I'll get the sensation of lifting off the ground, but I have to be meditating.
Yeah, this was just walking down the street, like going to school.
Well, now, when that happened, did you ever mention anything like that to your mom?
Oh, heavens, no. No, I thought I was crazy.
Oh, you thought you were crazy.
I kind of did.
Hmm.
You know? And she never mentioned anything like that to me. You know, if it was something that she said that it happened to her, I probably would have went, oh, Mom, guess what?
It happened.
But yeah. But no, that was never brought up. So it was just like, I kind of kept that little nugget to myself. I was just like, I don't want anybody thinking I need to be going to the, you know, crazy house.
And at least you have validation from other family members in figuring that they just put the wrong mushrooms on your pizza.
Exactly. You know, it took years later, all this time, you know, I was like, I wonder if anybody else does that. You know, but, you know, it's nice to get a validation like that.
Well, now, your mom passed away, I would say, a few months after your daughter was born.
Well, actually, my daughter was three.
Oh, she was three. Okay.
Yeah, when my mom passed away.
And then when your daughter was four, she come and said something to you.
This was really, really crazy. But it makes me kind of warm at heart too. You know, when my mom was in a nursing home, she was terminally ill with emphysema. And I used to bring my daughter up there to visit, and they used to play little games, and, you know, my mom would read to her and, you know, normal little things like that. And my mom ended up passing away. And one day my daughter was up in her bedroom, and this was like in the middle of the day. We had a two-story home, and she was in like the attic loft. And she came downstairs, and she was like kind of excited, and she's like, Mom, I just saw, she used to call her grandma, like G-A-M-M-A. I can't even pronounce it the way she used to do it, but she said, Grandma, I just saw grandma, you know? And then I was kind of like, did you? And she goes, yeah. And she described to me that she was in her bedroom and that she saw a ring of light right in front of her face. And it was just kind of, you know, just a circle, and it was kind of glowing, like twinkling. And to me, that was like, wow. And, you know, show me where this happened. She brought me up in her bedroom and stood in the place where she was standing, and she said, right here. And she kind of motioned where the circle was. And I said, well, did it scare you? And she looked at me like I was crazy. She goes, no, why would grandma scare me? You know, it 3 years old, you know, that it was bananas, you know. But then I'm thinking to myself, why is that crazy? Out of all the things, you know, that have happened to me and everything that I believe and thought, why, you know, that's awesome. And that's when I knew she was going to start going on this crazy roller coaster along with us.
Mm-hmm. Which still happens today, right?
She suppresses it as much as possible, but she is a strong, strong staff.
Mm-hmm.
And she has also done a little bit of premonitionist. The book, I kind of tell how when she was growing up, she used to get this, and everybody does this, you know, the sensation when you leap off the bed and then you fall, and it feels like you fell back into your bed in a dream.
Right.
That happened to her all the time.
Hmm.
And to the point where she was getting really annoyed with it. And so I started asking some metaphysical people about it, and they said, well, she's probably journeying in her sleep, and that's when she comes back. Well, to a mother, that's kind of freaky, you know, like, where'd she go?
Yeah.
You know, what is she doing, you know? But then she started having premonitions to where twice she predicted, this was when she was getting in her teenage years, that she predicted two of her friends at different times were going to miscarry. And she told me about it, and she goes, should I say something? And it's like, no, because there's nothing you can do, and don't put that worry in anybody's head.
Right.
And sure enough, 3 days, at both times, 3 days after she had the dream that her friends miscarried, they did.
Wow.
And now she calls me, you know, when she has episodes or something happens, she blames me. You made me this way. Like, yeah, because I made her that way, you know. Sorry.
Yeah, you had the X-Men gene, so it passed on.
Yeah, and I just tell her, I said, well, we're not the only ones, you know. And she goes, I know, but she goes, I don't like it. I don't want to do this. you know, and she's, it kind of upsets her sometimes, I think. It just annoys her. And she calls me the crazy lady. And all of her friends know what I am, what I do. And she reads tarot now. So I'm like, well, who's crazy now?
Uh-huh. Well, now.
Which deck does she
use? Go ahead, Jeff.
I was going to say, which deck does she utilize?
Oh, I want to say the angel cards. I think she has a couple of different ones. Her roommate that she has right now is kind of freaked out about it because he is of strong Christian belief. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, honey, you shouldn't be living with her because...
Right.
You know, she's out there. So I think it kind of, yeah, but it's kind of funny because when he'll bring people, you know, to their apartment or something, he'll say, oh, we'll have her read you. She does tarot, you know. You know, so now she's like a novelty.
Right. Well, now, is this your daughter that lives in Wilmington?
She lives in Myrtle Beach right now. She wants to move to Wilmington, but if I move, I'm hoping to get her back home to Michigan. I think she should go.
Mm-hmm.
And I think her cousin Brent and her great cousin Dan should get on that. I'm convincing her to come home.
I've been to Myrtle Beach.
You're going to miss the beach.
You know, I thought I'd miss it, but I'm a little tired of it already.
Yeah. Well, in the wintertime, there won't be much down there.
Tell me about it.
Turned into to where all the rich people that retired from the north is now moved down and bought condos and all that stuff. That's why there's so many people in such a small town.
Yeah. There's certain times of day you don't get in your car and go out.
No. And that's why you couldn't pay me to live down there again. I used to love to go over to the beach and fish on Johnny Mercer's Pier at night.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't be anybody over there. I mean, you just go over and sit. If you catch something, fine. If you don't, you're just sitting out there enjoying the breeze and sound of the waves, and it's real calming like that.
Yep, people are there all the time.
Yeah. So, let's see here. Well, now
I have a question. Being a witch, you're being a witch and all. Which deity pantheon do you follow?
See, that's the whole thing. People ask me, you know, are you a hedge witch? Are you a kitchen witch? Are you, you know, or anything like that. You know, my mom, when I was little, used to call me her heathen child. And so I just, you know, I'm okay with being called a heathen witch. I'm good with that. I just say organic witch just because it's natural to me. And I think organic is kind of like the buzzword right now. So organic witch, that sounds really good because it just, you know, it just sounds so today.
Like you get your herbalist over at Trader Joe's, then, I guess.
Yeah, I can just go in there and go, yeah, I can just stay right here and hang by the oranges because I'm organic. Yeah, it's fine. Now, you know, some people say, like, oh, you know, well, you know, if you call yourself a heathen witch, that means that you're a Satanist. No, I'm not a Satanist. You know, well, everybody always.
On the heath. And all paganism meant is that people who lived in the country.
Right. People of the earth. So, yeah. You know, it's all what you know and what and your perception of the word.
Now, you you also said that you feel that your sister has, the senses like what you have also.
She absolutely does. I don't think she's as comfortable with them. Or accepts them. So she kind of, I don't want to say she suppresses them because she also is a very, very strong empath. I have a lot of really strong empaths in the family. She is one. And I talk about something that happened in the book that, you know, how can you deny your gift? Because when I was pregnant, she was in Florida when I was due. And my mom was taking care of her two daughters, and I went into labor. And nobody knew that I was in labor. I didn't make the phone calls or anything because it happened so quickly. And I was in the hospital, and my sister called my mother and told her that I think Kimmy's in labor. because her incision, she had both of her daughters by C-section. Her incision was red and inflamed, and her kids were 10 years older than my daughter. Why would her incision get all inflamed and all red, and it was really sore and tender? And why would she call my mother and say, is Kimmy in labor? My mom didn't know I was in labor until the next day after I had her. And she goes, your sister called and told me what happened. I was like, whoa, that's crazy.
Which also in the book, it goes on to where your nieces and nephews also are carrying on the tradition.
They are. My one niece, I refer to them by their initials because I didn't know how they would feel about their actual name being in the book. So my eldest niece, we call her C. She's very empathic. She has had experiences to where she has felt my mother comfort her when she was going through hard times. She had a stationary chair in her parents' house that my mom actually used to sit in a lot when they were growing up, when she would babysit them and all. And they would sit on her lap and she would read to them and whatnot. And when she would get depressed, she would, you know, kind of sit in that chair. And she said she could feel somebody hug her and the chair would start to rock. Now, it's a stationary chair, not a rocking chair, but she says she could actually feel like somebody rocking her. And it was very comforting to her. And again, she never really mentioned this to anybody because, you know, just like everybody else, people are going to think you're crazy if you talk like that. But that was kind of her little thing, that whenever she got depressed or felt down, she could feel somebody hug her and rock her like my mom used to do. And, you know, that's really cool. And she says, and even today, I know when grandma's around, you know, and that's really, really cool. Now, my other niece, we'll refer to her as T. She's very much like me. She is a force to be reckoned with when she's mad. She is really a mother bear. You do something be wrong in the family, you might as well just pack up your bags and leave because she's going to get you back. And she has this way of a knowing more than probably anybody else in the family among the kids. She has a knowing that's so intense that it freaks her coworkers out because she'll say things and they will happen. And then her coworkers will say, well, you must have known about it already. And she didn't. She just says, to me, it's just logical. And of course, that's the way it's going to happen. And she had, I got to tell you this one story, which I thought was really hysterical. She was at a grocery store, and kind of like one of those grocery stores with a gas station incorporated in it. No. And one of the guys was just being really rude to her. Some guy in line was being really, really rude to her and really, really obnoxious. So they both walked out at the same time, and she goes, Aunt Kim, I don't know why I said it. She goes, but I told him, your truck's not going to start. And she goes, and I walked away and got in my truck. And she goes, I didn't even know if he drove a truck. You know, that man walked over to his truck and tried to start it, and it wouldn't?
It wouldn't start.
And she goes, and I just drove away, and I waved at him. You know, but it's things like that. You know, I'm pretty sure she's an organic witch, because a lot of the stuff she does is pretty remarkable. You know, and I always joke with her, you know, you're a witch. And she just kind of, you know, gives me that smile, kind of like, yeah, I know, but she ain't going to admit it.
Which I guess leads me to one of the questions that I had. After you accepted that you were a witch, how did that change the way that you let others see you?
Oh, sigh of relief. It was like... For a lack of a better analogy, it's like being gay and you're finally coming out of the closet. It's just like, here I am, accept me or not. And the reaction really wasn't as negative as I thought. Of course, you're going to get your negative people. And, you know, you're going to have some that, you know, I actually had a boss, a manager of mine, that was really didn't like when she found out I was. But then the majority of people are more curious and probably more accepting than one would expect. And that kind of surprised me.
I think that it's more open now, and it's more, I guess, people accept it more.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And it's not like back in the 1700s when they was burning them at the stakes, or even if somebody just accused you and you weren't, there was no getting out of it. I mean, you died one way or the other.
So. Right. But you know what one of my pet peeves is? I don't know if it's a nervous thing or if they just don't know how else to react, but when somebody finds out you're a witch or even a psychic or anything out of the norm, they joke about it, and sometimes even in a mocking fashion. And I don't think they realize that that's a little insulting.
Right.
What do you do?
If people make fun of somebody who's a witch, I just point out, so would you say the exact same thing if you found out they were a Jew or Hindu?
Well, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like I said, I don't know if that's maybe just a nervous thing, or
it could be kind of like, in one sense, afraid. They don't want to believe it, but if you say something like that, they might be thinking, if it's real, they might put a spell on me or something, turn me into a toad. You know?
But they're not supposed to believe that because they're very Christian.
Right.
And you don't believe in that stuff.
You're also at the mercy of the Hollywood nonsense version of witches and witchcraft, and a lot of the times Hollywood's also equating witchcraft with Satanism, which in itself is a bastard stepchild of the Catholic Church and has nothing to do with witchcraft.
Well, yeah. And I think that's part of it too. You know, when you don't know, you know, or you don't even care to know, that's another part of the pet peeve, is that they don't even care to learn about it, or even the smallest thing. It's just like a little knowledge will go a long way to get rid of a lot of your fear and your ignorance. Just a little bit.
It took a lot of U.S. veterans and families years to get the U.S. Army to recognize witchcraft and or Wicca as a valid religion, to have five-pointed stars placed on veteran graves. Or
I know,
rather, fallen graves.
Isn't it awesome that they can do that now, though? I think that's phenomenal. Finally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Finally.
I got a question from the chat room from Nyla, and she wanted you to tell about the repair guys who saw all your witchy stuff.
Repair guys?
Yeah, something about a repair guys who come in to fix something or other, and they saw all your witchy stuff.
Oh, that was the funniest thing. Yeah, I almost forgot about that. Yeah, I had some windows put into my house. And, of course, they got to enter your house to put in new windows. And I have an office. It was upstairs. And there was no way possible I could take all of my stuff down. I had bookcases full of, all these, a lot of religious books, but a lot of them were witchcraft books and spell books and metaphysical books. And I have this big cross that has a black crow on it. It was when I was doing my radio show, so of course my computer screen, said the Rain Occult Radio on it, all this stuff. And it was kind of funny because they went up into the office, and I actually took down some of the really bad stuff, the stuff that would freak them out, like the skulls and things like that. I mean, I put those away, but I couldn't put away everything. So they go up there, and I was just outside the room, and I hear one of them say, "Do you see that?" And the other one's going, "Shh," they're right outside the door, and they're whispering, and I could tell they're talking about what's in the room. And it kind of amuses me when people do that. It's just like, I'm right here. And you could tell when they came out of the room, they just didn't know quite, do I make eye contact with her? You know, do I say something? You know, oh my God, let's hope this is everything's perfect, because if not, we will die. You know? So it was one of my more enjoyable moments of what I am. It was. And so, oh, somebody put in the chat. What was that?
I was going to say, did you actually, was it more like altered stuff or just display stuff?
I have everything. I mean, I have, somebody just asked, was that a sugar skull? No, it wasn't sugar, it was a skull. Like, like an actual skull. I had everything. I had everything from the kitschy cutie little things that people gave me, right up to like the hardcore stuff that, you know, I would, the books that I would get from Corvus and Father Sebastian Van Houten, you know, like the Chaos Magics, you know, I mean, I had athames and all my herbs and ritual stuff. And I mean, you know, I didn't hide anything. It was my office. And if you came into my house, I would assume you would know me enough. I had my pentacles up, everything. Candles. Oh, I had my candle altar up, everything. So
I have a question. When you discovered you were a witch, who did you first turn to start acquiring items that you would... I'm sorry, I don't mean to offend any of our other witch listeners, because I have absolutely no idea what goes into it.
It was kind of interesting. We had a store that, mm-hmm. there's actually two stores that were by me. One was called the Unicorn Garden, and the other one is the Aquarian Bookshop.
Okay.
And I started just kind of going in there and seeing these things. And actually, the people in there would say, oh, well, you know, we would recommend this, or, you know, because I asked, just like you, you know, just mm-hmm. like you asked. I went in there and I just said, hey, I just found out, you know, and kind of go into a little story. And they're like, well, you have to pick what feels right for you. And I'm like, okay, so this is going to be a chore. So I spent a lot of time in both of those stores. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I started meeting crazy people like you guys.
Oh, now we're crazy.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
I'm perfectly normal.
No, you're not.
Henry, we sit in dark rooms for hours. We're nuts.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, that was the whole thing, you know. And then, you know, people started, you know, exchanging things. Oh, I want to send you, you know, very giving people. Mm-hmm. You know, Corvus started saying, you know, do you mind, you know, I don't want to push anything on you, but, you know, I got a couple books you want. Yeah, send them on, brother. You know, so I got books from, and then here's a crazy story. Explain this one to me, guys. I got a P.O. box, right? Because let's face it, there's crazy and then there's crazy. And I didn't want everybody sending me a lot of things to my home. So I got a P.O. box and I got books and stuff like that for the radio show, you know, and I would send promo stuff out and, you know, and receive things back in. And one day, and Bobby is in the chat room, and I had this discussion with her. She was sitting in my office. And I was showing her, I was giving her some of my stuff before I moved. And I got this book of voodoo spells. I don't know where it came from. It didn't come with a note. It didn't come with a return address. It didn't come with anything but a brown wrapper.
A voodoo doll.
A voodoo book, like how to do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, how did you.
Maybe the voodoo doll was
one of those. Something. From one of those plain brown wrapper companies. Yeah,
I was expecting an invoice, you know, because I got some things from Red Wheel Wiser, you know, before, but I always get an invoice. If Corvus sends me something, I always get an invoice. You know, I always got some kind of, you know, acknowledgement, you know, like, I'm sending you this book, blah, 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 hope you enjoy it, signed, whoever. This just came, it was just a book.
Well, that's creepy.
Yeah, and I'm looking around it, and I'm going through the pages trying to see if somebody put a card inside. Nothing. I don't know where this book came from, where, how they got my P.O. box. Nothing. I don't know.
Is your P.O. box on any of your websites or anything like that they would have found?
No, I only gave my P.O. box, like, if somebody inquired, like, I want to send you something, you know, can I have your address? And I said, well, I got a P.O. box. you know, and nobody ever inquired that I wanted to send you a creepy little voodoo book. So, and then I had some kind of inscription wrote in, I can't remember what it was, but there was drawings, like putting drawings in it. So I don't know if somebody's trying to maybe send me a message. I don't know.
Well, maybe it's from the Half-Blood Prince then. Oh, wait, no.
Yeah.
I don't know, but nobody sent me anything like anything dead or creepy like that. It was just that book. So
book. I've gotten stuff like that in my mailbox.
Yeah, that fruitcake.
Okay.
You got an anonymous fruitcake?
No, no.
I have a rental box that I use for all mail matter because it's the one permanent location to which stuff can be mailed, and it's not at the post office, it's its own like a mailing store. Mm-hmm. So that because a lot of times if you order something it won't go to a PO box,
right?
So, you can't send it. So here it just goes, and it looks like it's going to an apartment for all right now.
Mm-hmm.
yeah
Henry got sent a fruitcake last Christmas,
and we was on break and I didn't have my mic muted.
Nope.
And Etsy came up and started telling me about the fruitcake.
This wonderful fruitcake. And we have never lived it down.
Nice.
We like to taunt him with it.
It makes a good doorstop.
It does.
I think what we're going to do is go ahead and take our last break. And Jeff can take us out and CC can bring us back. Yeah.
Pick someone!
I guess.
Or
we got about 6-7 minutes, something like that. So we'll do that. We'll come back. Got lots more, so don't go away.
Yeah. So you're listening to The Paranormal View on para-x.com with hosts Henry Foister, Tax Loco, Ceiling Cat Barbara Duncan, and myself, Jeffrey Gould, who's our guest author and witch, Kimmy J. Belanger, discussing her book. So stay tuned for more of The Paranormal View after the break.
There's a darkness in the hallway. Voices that seem to come from nowhere. Alone at night, there is a feeling that something or someone is near. Where can you go? Who can you turn to? Para-X Radio and the all-new Para-X Vision can help. Our knowledgeable host and expert guest can help you find some answers and take a glimpse into the unknown. Para-X Radio and Para-X Vision, programming for the open mind.
So, you had a lucid dream about living in Atlantis, teaching telepathy, and you're wondering what it means. We can actually help. We are the School of Metaphysics, a 40-year-old international resource for people who have questions. Big, juicy, deep questions about life and death and everything in between. 16 branches in the U.S., self-guided study online, weekend courses, webinars, and books. Send us a telepathic fax or visit our website, www.som.org. This could be the start of something really interesting.
Marla's Sacred Cauldron. This is the legendary artifact that has been whispered about in hushed tones for hundreds of years, and now it's mine! All mine!
Who dares defile the sanctity of my castle walls? Step away from the cauldron, you impertinent, muddy metal maltworm.
Never! I've spent half my lifetime trying to discover your age-old secret of stirring the cauldron!
Oh, for Merlin's sake, that's no deep, dark secret. Just tune into the Para-X Radio Network Thursday nights at 9 o'clock Eastern for more cauldron stirring than you can shake a wand at.
Oh. Well, in that case, I guess I don't need to take up any more of your time, so I guess I'll be going.
Not just yet. We've got a little unfinished business to take care of.
That's Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on the Para X Radio Network. 9 words women use. 1.
Fine.
This is the word women use to end an argument when they are right and you need to shut up. 2.
5 minutes.
If she is getting dressed, this means a half hour. 5 minutes is only 5 minutes if you have just been given 5 more minutes to watch the game before helping around the house. 3.
Nothing.
This is the calm before the storm. This means something, and you should be on high alert. Arguments that begin with
nothing
usually end in
fine.
4.
Go ahead.
Warning. Warning, Will Robinson. This is a dare, not permission. Don't do it. 5. This is actually a word, but it is a nonverbal statement often misunderstood by men. A loud sigh means that she thinks you are an idiot and wonders why she is wasting her time standing here arguing with you about nothing. Refer back to number 3 for the meaning of nothing. 6.
That's okay.
This is one of the most dangerous statements a woman can make to a man.
That's okay.
Means that she wants to think long and hard before deciding how and when you will pay for your mistake. 7.
Thanks.
A woman is thanking you. Do not question or faint. Just say, you're welcome. Be careful. This is true unless she says,
thanks a lot.
That is pure sarcasm, and she is not thanking you at all. Do not say you're welcome if she says,
thanks a lot.
Or that will bring on,
whatever.
8.
Whatever.
This is the woman's way of saying,
fuck you.
9.
Don't worry about it. I got it.
Another dangerous statement, meaning this is something that a woman has told a man to do several times, but is now doing it herself. This will later result in a man asking, what's wrong? For the woman's response, refer to number 3. And that is just 9 words women like to use.
It's always time for the dead to shine in Hollywood. The legendary Dearly Departed Tours has stepped up their ghostly game by offering the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour. Dearly Departed has long been an orb of hope in the paranormal world, having been featured on television's Haunted History and Haunted Collector. Their terrible tales have been made infamous in Marla Brooks' The Ghosts of Hollywood books. The new Ghosts and Legends Tour is a 10-block, 70-minute dusk time stroll down the boulevard of broken dreams. You'll be guided through the golden age of Hollywood and see where the unearthly Bela Lugosi, Lon Chaney, and the calamitous Black Dahlia are still said to linger. You'll see Hollywood's gothic hotels, legendary theaters, and restaurants, never forgetting their permanent occupants. No stranger to investigations, Dearly Departed Tours has first-hand knowledge of some of these hauntings. For details of the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour, find Dearly Departed Tours on Facebook, dearlydepartedtours.com, or call 1-855-600-DEAD.
Para X Radio presents Real Persons of Genius.
Real Persons of Genius.
Today, we salute you, Mr. and Mrs. Para X show host.
Mr. and Mrs. Para X show host.
Armed with nothing more than a laptop and a microphone, you hit the air to scare the bejesus out of your audience.
What the hell was that noise?
Like a dog peeing on a fire hydrant, you always whet our appetite for more.
I just can't get enough.
Whether it's witches, ghosts, fairies, or Bigfoot, we admire your ability to set aside reality and believe anything anyone tells you.
Seek professional help.
So the next time you're kneeling in front of your 8x10 glossy of Dave and Tom lighting a candle, remember, if it wasn't for you, I might be able to sleep without the lights on.
Mr. and Mrs. Para X Soho.
Para X Radio Network, powered by CBS.
And welcome back, everybody, to the Paranormal View here on Para-X Radio. We want to thank everyone for showing up tonight, and the chat room is just hopping tonight with all sorts of conversations going on in there. And we want to welcome back our guest, Kimmy Ballanger. Welcome back, Kimmy.
Thanks, guys. I got my wine.
Oh,
Oh.
I like your long breaks.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
It gives me plenty of time to go get my wine, do whatever else I need to do, come back.
Yeah, that's the way we like to do it. Give everybody a break in between, you know. They get tired of listening to me talk.
That's perfect.
So, talking about your book, talk about some of the broken branches. Since you were the youngest and I guess didn't really have anybody stand up for you, what is some of the broken branches?
That was kind of a metaphor for family. I have a lot of broken people in my family.
Right.
And, what was that?
I said, I got that.
Yeah, I think everybody, that's what I tell everybody. It's like, I'm not the only one. I mean, everybody's got a problem. Everybody's got a situation. And none are more traumatic or dramatic than the other. They're just different. And, you know, mine, I happen to have a lot of broken branches in my family tree. And, you know, a lot of people don't want to talk about it. And I just said, you know what, I'm going to talk about it. And you're all going to have to deal with it. Because y'all know it's true. So, you know, let's just go there. And, you know, since I wrote the book, I've had a couple of people come to me and say, you know what, I'm really glad you said it. Because I've been wanting to say it, but in our family didn't say things.
Right.
And so that was good. That was good. You know, and I think it kind of did a little bit of healing also with some people.
Well, yeah, I'd tend to say that there is more, I would say, dysfunctional families than what you might think. Uh-huh. And there's more of them than the Leave It to Beaver families.
They're the scary ones.
Yeah.
Walking around black and white, not even in color.
Exactly. They're the scary ones.
So, Kimmy, I know that there are a lot of empaths in your family, as stated in your book, but does anybody else hold any other abilities, psychic abilities, besides being an empath?
I think so. Again, I don't think it's really... You know what? A lot in my family have had confrontations with shadow people, dark masses, hearing voices, and they for lack of a better word, most of them just don't even know what to do with it, you know, and that's why I kind of wanted to write this book saying, well, there are things you can do with it, you know, and you don't need to be afraid of it, and you don't need to ignore it.
Right.
You know, embrace it and talk, you know, somebody's trying to reach you guys, you know, somebody's trying to say something. So acknowledge it and quit trying to push it away, you know, develop it. And I think some of them are starting to listen. I really do. Like my nephew, Brent, I'm going to call you out. Brent's in the chat room. And we recently had our family reunion this summer. And I haven't seen him in a long time. And I'm so, so glad we reconnected because we had a nice talk. And, you know, we were sitting at the kitchen table. And he said, you know, I want to tell you something. And he told me the story of what happened to him, how he was confronted more or less by some kind of entity or some kind of spirit that actually held his hands down when he was laying in bed. He had his hands up above his head, and he could feel the pressure of whatever it was pushing his, you know, his elbows back up above his head into the bed. You know, and he comes from a pretty strong Catholic background. So imagine that happening to you. And then he actually had the reaction like I would have to say, you know, to fight back more or less. And I thought that was like really cool that he felt good enough to tell me that. You know, and if people didn't know that I, you know, that I was doing what I was doing and I was writing this book, I would have never known that story. And so I think it's good that it's finally getting out. And I know Brent's experienced a lot more than what he's even told me, because I can see it in his face when we were talking. I could see he's gone through probably a little bit more than he's telling me yet. But in time, I hope maybe he will.
I was reading something.
Yeah, me too.
What are y'all reading? What's going on here?
Sorry, we're all reading and talking in the chat room.
Yeah.
Being distracted every which way with people.
Now, I know you're an empath, and you are saying that a lot of your family is also. Do they know what an empath is?
They do now.
They do now. I mean, after reading your book, have they asked you anything about them being an empath? Have you told them what it entails?
I have. And this was even before I even wrote the book, we started having these discussions. And they would say, I don't know why I'm so emotional, or why does this one person make me crazy, or, you know, what, you know, I don't like to be in crowds. And I'm going like, well, let me tell you, you know. And then I started telling them, and they get it, and they were like, wow, okay, now I understand that a little bit more. And, you know, me going through the turmoil I'm going through right now, my niece T said that she had a migraine the other night, and then she saw that I posted on Facebook that I was not feeling well and I had a migraine. She goes, that was you. And I said, yeah, it probably was. So it's being much more, you know, accepted now. And now they talk to me on the basis of, you know, their gift, and not putting it under the rug, or just, you know, brushing it off as it's something else. Now they're starting to realize a little bit more the connection.
Or saying that you're crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I was always the crazy aunt, but my sister, God bless my sister. My sister was always the crazy one, you know, and she literally, you know, she'd say, why does everybody think I'm crazy? You know, well, you know, because you act a little crazy, you know,
crazy.
Yeah, you know, and I'm a little crazy, and we're all a little crazy, you know, but I think maybe it helped her realize her crazy. You know, I get it. You know, you're an empath, and you're feeling, and that's why you're having these anxiety attacks, and that's why, you know, you're crying when you're not quite sure why you're crying, or, you know, if somebody's hurt, why it affects you so deeply. You know, it's not all that everybody's always depressed, or somebody needs a pill, or, you know, or somebody,
right,
you know, needs to go to therapy. Maybe you're just an empath, and you need to get a grip on this.
You talk about, in your book, you also talk about magic. What is magic, and the different kinds of magic?
I think people make magic sound like Hollywood magic, you know, like David Copperfield come to town and he's going to do his magic. And I get mocked about it. I do. But really, guys, magic is all intent. And it's very much like prayer. If you go to church and you sit there and you fold your hands and you kneel and you're praying to God for something, in a way, you're creating your own magic. You're creating your own miracle. You're putting the intent out to the universe or your God, you know, and you're creating your own magic. And that's all it is. It's not something, you know, that, like Sabrina the Teenage Witch and all that. And, you know, and I know it's fun to mock people about it, but that's, I mean, brass tacks, that's what it is. I do rituals. It's symbolistic. It creates an intent and a power within that I can send out to the universe or send to somebody else, you know, either telepathically or empathically. And that is essentially what it is. Everything else is symbolistic. You know, I'm not going to make somebody a toad. I'm not going to, you know, create something to somebody to devastate, you know, their household or anything like that. You know, it's all intent. It's all connection. It's all energy. It's sending it out and receiving it back. It's all it is.
So let me understand this now. With you doing magic, can you turn somebody into a toad?
If I could, you would see a whole lot of toads.
There'd be a lot of frogs.
There would be a ton of them.
Oddly enough, the thing is, as you say, people misunderstand the concept of magic. My first metaphysics teacher pointed out that magic is affecting the universe in a method that cannot be measured by science yet. Mm-hmm. But as he also pointed out, that the one religion that probably does the most magic,
say
even
it.
More than witches, is
say it.
Catholicism.
Yes!
Because when they pray to deity, that's magic. When they light a candle, they're creating a ritual, they're doing symbolism, and like essentially all a spell, like you say, a spell is intent. If a spell works, then the intent was strong enough. If it didn't, there you go. But one of my favorite lines from the George Byrne movie, Oh God, was one of the questions he was asked is, why do you not answer all of the prayers that people ask? You know, he says, I answer every prayer. Sometimes the answer is no.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, as anthropologists who study religion, everyone, no matter what religious name you may assign it, you are doing the same thing. You're creating a liminal period where the supernatural is able to affect what we consider the normal world. So lighting candles, saying incantations, I just lost my train of thought. But they all are considered, we look at them equally. So a pagan ritual is not going to be very much different from a Catholicism to, Protestant. You all gather, you summon whichever deity you believe in, and you do some type of ritual to appease the deity to answer whatever intent you're sending at it. And it's the same way when you're Buddhist and when you're Shinto or Taoist. So it's just your styles of communicating with the higher power are what are going to be different.
That's exactly right.
Yep.
But everybody wants to make it out to be so much more than what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And willing to fight over it and kill each other over it.
True.
And all the tools, all the physical tools used in witchcraft are simply to help focus intent. Like you say, the symbolism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, even brushing your teeth, this is a fun thing about anthropology. Anthropologists consider the act of getting up in the morning and brushing your teeth to be an act of ritual, even though you are not summoning anything. So that's just another fun little...
More like you're repelling things.
Well, no, it's the fact that you make time to do a certain thing, but anyhow. But that's falling away from what we're doing. I'm summoning away the plaque from my gums.
Well, I think you guys, at least I know Cece was there for the infamous radio show that I did with a demonologist.
Yep.
That sounds exciting.
Would that be one that I know, maybe possibly one that used to have a show here?
I don't think he did have a show. No.
I'm curious as to what happened.
Oh, weren't you there?
No.
Well, shame on you. You should have been listening to my show.
I'm sorry.
No, we were live on air, of course, as Para X is always live, and we had a demonologist on, and he knew that I was a pagan, and aka a witch, and so I think there was a little bit of intensity there already, which I didn't have a problem with it, but apparently he did. And we were talking, and he has a real problem with me doing candle magic.
Okay.
To which my response was,
candle magic?
It's basically lighting a candle and doing your chants and, you know, just sending your intent out just like anything else. I like it because it's hypnotical because of the flame. It kind of gets me in a more of a meditative hypnotic state.
Okay.
But he had a problem with it. And I said, you're a Catholic demonologist, so isn't it much like lighting candles in the church?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't like that answer.
Yeah, it didn't go over.
How dare you show him a mirror?
Yes, and then we got into the incense and things like that. I said, oh, very much like when you put incense in
a censer.
That thing that you swing while mass is going on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Didn't like that answer. Mm-hmm. You know,
there's a one panel cartoon that I finally found a version of it, not the original one I saw, where it's a person in a little hooded monk outfit and rosary beads. He's pulling a little red wagon. Inside there's like a rabbit and eggs and a yule tree and all this stuff, and it says, for a religion that really hates us, you sure stole a lot of our stuff.
Yeah, it's I don't know why we fight over these things, but that really kind of irritated me when he did that. And the bottom thing, the one thing that literally almost put me over the edge, was the answer to every one of the questions. You know, he would say, but it is written, you know. And finally I lost my cookies and I said, uh-oh. Okay, it was written, much like Alice in Wonderland, which was also written by man.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had to go to break, and then we talked during break. Because we had to lower that down a notch, because I was getting a little, I was being insulted, and he needed to know that he needed to not do that.
Right.
Right.
So, but everything's fine. We remain civil friends.
Well, that's good.
Because you never know when you're going to need a demonologist.
Yeah.
That's true.
So, you're saying... at the start of the show, you had some cousins in here that you had some stories on that you was going to tell.
Well, Brent's one. He's my nephew. He's in the chat room. My cousin Dan is in there. And the neat thing about my cousin Dan is that I literally met him on Facebook not long ago. And we met face to face at the family reunion. And he has been very receptive and very loving, and you know, we talk and we discuss, and you know, I know he's of a Christian faith, and you know, me and being pagan, there's absolutely no bad, you know. I mean, he just accepts it, you know, and he's curious about the magics, and he's, you know, he's curious about what, you know, what I talk about, and you know, it's so cool, you know, and that's what we need more of that in families.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah. Make it like Beaver.
Well yeah.
No, you don't want it that way.
As best you can, but not in black and white. Yeah. You know, but I do have a cousin which is not in the chat room, and I don't think he showed up at the family reunion because he knew I was going to be there.
Really?
Mm. Yeah, because he was all about being at the family reunion until I RSVP'd.
Hmm.
And then all of a sudden he had to work.
Oh.
And his brother was there, and his brother's very cool, and you know, we get along really, really well. But that kind of bothered me too, because I actually asked him to be on my show and he refused. He's a reverend.
But we're
family, and yeah. I totally respect him, you know. But you know what? I got some really negative Nancy stuff from him.
Hmm.
You know, and
that's sort of along the lines of people who are insecure enough about their religion that they have to worry about other people having different religions than theirs.
Well, that's the whole thing, because when he would tell me things and I had an answer, oh my God, I had an answer. And he didn't like me having an answer or a different opinion. And he refused to be on my show because I wanted to talk to him about family and how family, me being pagan and him being a reverend, it's okay.
Right.
We can still all get along. And he refused me.
Hmm.
And then the final insult came when he unfriended me on Facebook.
Oh, he unfriended you? Oh.
He did. I was like, seriously? I'm unfriended.
Unfriended? What?
What is...
That's kind of strong. Yeah.
Well, no, he's well into his 40s, but But yeah, it was just a difference that he didn't want to accept. And, you know, I thought it wasn't that big of a deal, but apparently I'm not supposed to have an opinion. I'm not supposed, I'm the demon and, you know, my words are twisted, you know, and just all this crazy. And it was from his side, not mine.
Well, now,
we had an open pagan festival up in the San Fernando Valley here some years ago, and I had attended it, and there was this guy walking around. He wasn't being hassling anybody, but he was just standing. There was this massive banner on a pole saying how everybody attending the event was going to burn in hell. And eventually, we were just curious enough, you know, what would drive someone to do that? Like what I like to say is, you know, people using their out loud voice. And a few of us went over. We simply asked, and we had a very civil discussion about the distinctions of what he believed as opposed to what existed in reality. And the thing is a lot of people don't understand that people who are pagans and witches, because not always the same thing, all witches are pagans, but not all pagans are witches, that we really kind of know the Bible. We know because most of us were raised with the Bible and some form of religion, and it simply found a different path. So they were able to have a very cool, civil, theological discussion, and the guy never raised his voice. He never called his name. He called anybody names, and vice versa. And it's a shame that they didn't have smartphones back then for it to be recorded. But it was just interesting that he chose to say, "I'm going to protest this," and he was just standing there minding his own business with this huge, rather hilarious banner.
On a similar note, and for our listeners, I'm a comic book artist by trade, basically. I also am an author. But at comic book conventions, it's not too odd to see one or two super religious Christian protesters outside picketing. But another one, a convention that I go to called OhioCon, it's in Columbus, Ohio. Wonderful convention. But it tends to always land on the same weekend as one of two other conventions. The State of Ohio Cheerleading Finals, which is usually when who's there, or the State of Ohio Christian Youth Family Reunion, basically, where all of these Christian youths from different youth groups from across the state convene into Columbus and share the same convention space as us cosplayers and lovers of sci-fi and fantasy. And oh my gosh, there are so many clashes that happen, especially in the shared restaurant area. And usually, now this is from my observation, it's not going to be 100%, but from my experience, it's usually the kids from the youth groups that are picking on the people going to the comic book convention. And it's sad. It's really sad to see that. And I'm like, guys, this is kind of going against what you are trying to be taught in these youth groups, I believe. Because I was a member of a youth group once, and that's not at all what we were told to do.
Exactly.
Right.
Well, what are you going to do? You're always going to have that, you know, somebody's always got to ruin the party.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Always that one.
Now, getting down toward the last of your book, and I'm sure we got other questions going along with it, but the last thing that you talk about is responsibility.
Yes. Huge with me. I've got so many little, you know, pet peeves about just taking responsibility for your magics, for just being, no matter what religion you are. Again, another pet peeve of mine is like the weekend, I call them weekend witches, the ones that like to dabble a little bit, but they kind of still hold on to their, you know, what they know, their Christianity that they were brought up with, but they find everything else so fascinating
in the paganism world that they tried to kind of just do a little bit of dabbling, you know, and, you know, play a little bit. And that really irritates me because we take it very, very serious. You know, it's just like how a crucifix to a Catholic is, you know, something that you wear with pride. You know, our pentacles or pentagrams, whichever they you wear, you know, that's really special. And you got to take responsibility for your magics that you do. You know, you got to realize that everything you do has a ripple effect, you know, and that's something else I really try to tell people, you know, is stop and think about what you're doing. Think about the effect it's going to have, not only on the people that are right around you, but the broader circle. And that's how, you know, I try to teach some of my students, you know, and people that I mentor. It's like, you know, everything's not about you, but yet it is. I mean, you have to take responsibility for what you do, and you still got to do what makes you happy. Mm-hmm. You know, but because the ripple effect is huge, guys. When you throw a rock into a pond, you don't get just one ring around that rock. It ripples and ripples and ripples and ripples and ripples.
Going and going and going. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, of course, the farther the ripple gets out, the less impact it's going to have. But nevertheless, it has impact.
That's true. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, just think about what you're doing, people. It's kind of that easy. And then people say, well, you overthink things. You know, well, I tend to think some people underthink things.
Oh, yes. Yes, they do.
You know, and that therein lies a lot of the problem.
Well, did you guys have any other questions for Kimmy?
I have one.
Okay.
What do you think about how Hollywood treats witches in media? Such as Coven or, what was it, Witches of Eastwick. And
oh, my God. Okay, I loved Witches of Eastwick. Or what, East End?
Well, Eastwick is a movie from the 80s with, like, Cher.
Yeah, with Cher and Nicholson.
And then there's East End, too, now. I wasn't sure if that was just a title or actually a show about witches. So
it was. It's all fantasy. Yeah, it's all fantasy. I love the show. They had really hot guys on it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was great.
Oh,
but
for the guys. Oh.
Well, duh.
What, Henry? You're not interested in that?
No. No.
Well, I'll tell you, I did not watch Coven. The reason being, I got 10 minutes into it, and I was so... I couldn't get around in my brain that it was just entertainment and kind of like, ease up, Kimmy, it's okay, it's just a show.
Mm-hmm.
It irritated me. It irritated me to the point I found it very disrespectful. I found it totally fantasy, and I found it detrimental to what we're fighting against, trying to dispel the myth in Hollywood what witches really are.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I kind of went overboard on that, and that was just my crazy gene, is I found it very disrespectful and not entertaining.
Right.
So, but then again, with Charmed, tongue-in-cheek, you know, you know it's not real. I wish it was, because I'd love to do some of the stuff they did. But Coven made everybody evil, you know, like really evil. And I don't like that. I like it when it's done more tongue-in-cheek and, you know, cutesy type thing. Then I'm okay with it, because that's kind of like, that's kind of harmless.
Right.
So like Sabrina the Teenage Witch was okay, kind of. I mean, I enjoyed the show. And...
Are you a fan?
Well, I for most of my part, who actually just started following me on Twitter. I liked the show. I thought it was silly and funny. And I even worked on one of the episodes as a background actor.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, right after I did Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? No, the other one. Man, I Wasn't There.
Wow. I'm going to have to look a little closer next time.
I'll send you the link to the report page where you actually see my head kind of downward Picarded.
I do like playing the find the Jeff in whatever I'm watching game, like Argo.
Yeah, it's the Where's Waldo of the paranormal.
Yeah, it's Where's Waldo. Right.
Well, a lot of our listeners probably don't know that you do that, so they're going to have to look you up at Facebook, see what you look like, and then
whenever you're watching those movies. Okay. You know.
Well, Kimmy, I have a very controversial question for you.
Okay.
Why Bon Jovi? I mean, well, New Jersey has Bruce Springsteen, and why Bon Jovi?
Okay, true story. Sitting in my first, one of my first apartments back in the day, the year was 1982.
Is that where you was living with the five guys?
No, that wasn't my first. No. Well, thanks for putting that out there on the air. Okay. No, Henry, it wasn't that apartment. Okay. No, me and a couple of friends were sitting around, and do you remember when MTV first, like their very first show, they said, "Here comes MTV," and it was, you know, radio killed the video star, right? Or video killed the radio star.
Right.
Okay, we were watching that, and Bon Jovi video came on, "Runaway." Now, ladies, John Bon Jovi, 1982. Leather pants. Need I say more?
Are we back on the guy?
You know, he had better hair than I did, and I looked at that and I said, that guy is going to be a rock star. And I've been stalking him ever since.
you got a chance, though, to be at all the parties and everything.
I did. They had this little club, and they used to call it the Backstage, right? And if you could sign up for it, and you could go on these little concert things, you know, you could sign up and go to a couple of concerts, you know, stay in a hotel and go to the shows. But if you were a smart girl and you got to know the grips and you got to know the Backstage staffers and you got to know certain people, then you got to go backstage. And that's what we did.
Yeah, what was it you said you were? Was it a groupie?
Now, groupies are considered the rock and roll hoes of the group. Oh. So with that...
There's different levels of groupie.
There's different levels.
I was one, so I'm not sure exactly how that worked.
No, we got to know the insiders well enough to where, because actually, girls, when you're out at your concerts and, you know, you're lifting your shirts and all this other stuff, the guys are actually laughing at you. They're actually talking about you on how nasty you are. And so it's not really necessarily, those are the one night bangers, they call them. Those are the girls that were there really for one night. You didn't go to the after party. You weren't invited back. You weren't, you know, invited to go back to the hotel and, you know, then proceed with yet another party. Those girls never made that cut because they were nasty. So you got to play your cards right. I just got to know the guys, know the backstagers, and it was like, you know what, you're pretty cool. You're safe. So, you know, come on back and party with us. And then you're invited back. And then, you know, you upgrade to a better bus and, you upgrade to a better party. And then before you know it, you know, then you're actually, you know, phone numbers and stuff. And then you're actually friends. You're actually friends. You're not just somebody to hang out and fill space. Right. I have been in a VH1 video. I have been on MTV. Yeah.
Which video?
You're almost as famous as Jeff.
Which video?
Yeah.
Which video?
If VH1, it's called the One Wild Night, second row, you will see a blonde with a white shirt on. That is me.
All right. We got to go look for it.
But you have to put that in the chat room now.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. One Wild Night tour was like my big, like, there she is, claim to fame. And then they had a special on it also, and I was on like the TV special where we got interviewed, you know, hanging with the band, what's it like, blah blah blah. So that was fun. So wow, that was so not paranormal.
Yeah, but it's been bugging me for ages. Why Bon Jovi?
But it's Kim.
Figure it.
But I broke up with him. You heard I broke up with him, right?
Well, I know that that there.
I broke up with John because he went country. Okay, I can only take so much.
Okay, well.
He cheated on me with country. I'm done. We're done. We're over. The ring's been returned. The phone calls out of the they've stopped. It's done. We're done.
Well, the show is just shot right on by. I want you to tell people how they can.
Don't say that. Don't tell me to tell people.
Don't tell people?
Because I'll tell people.
Oh. I want you to tell people where they can get your book. And
okay.
How to get your book and how they, if they wanted to, get in contact with you and all the good stuff. And we want you to stay on until after we're off. We'll talk with you for a few minutes.
Okay, excellent. First, I just want to say thank you to Corvus Nocturnum. He has been fabulous. He's with Dark Moon Press. I was actually going to self-publish this book, and he said, oh, no. I got Michelle Belanger, and I'm having you. And I thought that was very cool. He has been really easy to work with. Anything that I screwed up, he fixed. I mean, he got it to press. He got it on Amazon.com. Just put the title of the you can put KJ Belanger in there, or you can put A Witch Walks Among Broken Branches. It'll take you right to it. You can get it there. I understand that DarkMoonPress.com, their website is down, but you can still email Corvus. He can get you a book. I have a couple signed copies left if you want to email me at kimmi.jae3@gmail. We can do it that way. I've got PayPal. I'll sign the book. I do have a sticker, a wax sticker that I put in it. You can do that. I understand that it's on Kindle. I have a website that's kimmyj.webs.com. That'll give you all the information on how to order the book as well. And you can find me on Facebook. It's just Facebook.com/kimmyj.
Right. Excellent. Excellent. I want to thank you for taking time to be with us tonight, too.
Oh, no, thank you. This was fun.
Excellent show. Well, our shows are always fun.
They really are, because you guys are just, not right.
Yeah, you were not. That's right. Something's wrong with us, right?
It's all good.
Jeff?
Hello.
Why don't you give our stuff out?
Absolutely. Well, you can go to my website at jeffgould.net, jeffgould.net/2011pnv.htm. That's my Paranormal View hub page where you can look up previous reports of shows that we've done. We have the archived podcasts both on that page, but if you go to the report page, the podcast will also be on that. Also, all the links that Kenny just managed to get out, her own website, her Facebook, her Twitter, all of that, the links to the Amazon book, looking all nice and pretty. And there you go. You can find us on Facebook. Look under the Paranormal View Community, not magazine. Our official website is theparanormalview.com. You can follow me at Twitter at RealBadger, RealBadger. I'm up to almost like 1,130 or 40 followers by now because I'm actually becoming quite active on Twitter. And look me up, Jeffrey Gould, GEOFFREY.GOULD on Facebook. And there you go.
And Kat?
Okay, everyone, get your pens ready because I have a whole bunch of addresses. First, you can go to my official webpage or website at www.kakloko.com. That's KATKLOCKOW.com. That gets updated fairly regularly on my activities. Both with comics and with my news on my second book. And you can visit the official Kakloko fan page at facebook.com/KakLokoFanPage. You can also visit my graphic novel, which is Jinxed. It will come out in January of 2015. But you can visit all the activity at the Jinxed Facebook page, which is just facebook.com/JinxedComic.
right.
Oh, yeah, and you can follow the Paranormal View on Twitter at Paraview Radio and myself at Cat Cloco and the Jinxed Comic at Jinxed Comic.
And if you have iTunes, you can go there to the podcasts and type in a search for the Paranormal View. And we have all our shows listed also on iTunes.
Yep.
So, with that.
Did you Save Our Ghost, Tim?
Do what?
I was just wondering about Save Our Ghost, but I guess.
Oh, yes, and Save Our Ghost, which is my current project, which is facebook.com/.
All right.
Save Our Ghosts.
Okay, next week will be our Thanksgiving special. So, till then, this is Henry Foister.
For Duncan.
And Cat Cloco.
And we will see you next week at the same time. Good night, everybody.
Visit us again if you dare. You've been listening to the Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network.
The Paranormal